The good, the bad, and the ugly. A full NHL draft weekend recap is coming your way. Plus, we'll look ahead to what is sure to be another chaotic week in the NHL world. It's the Monday edition of Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart with you on Twitter at the Golden Muzzy, at JT Bourne, at Stu Monroe, producer J.R. Manitat, as well as technical ops Dylan Brown and Lance Kennedy along for the ride as well. We're in store for another week of mayhem. Free agency kicks off on Wednesday at noon Eastern time. The condensed offseason means Tampa's partying and working at the same time. Nothing wrong with that, of course, but back-to-back Stanley Cups, they've earned it. And we'll catch up with Bolts head coach John Cooper in about 30 from now. Yanni Gord and Barclay Goodrow are done in Tampa. More to come for sure. First and foremost, some quick hitters before we get going here, guys. Florida and Sam Bennett. It sounds like 4 years, 17.6 mil total, 4.4 on the AAV, according to Elliot Friedman. And Vegas and Alec Martinez are closing in on a three-year extension around 5 mil per. How was your weekend, Justin?
Good. You know, went to Kelowna a little while back, so we're back home, just getting ourselves reset up at our place here. Life's good, man. How about you?
Fantastic. As I mentioned off the top, and Stewie, how about you first?
I'm doing well, buddy. Back on the ice, skating the kids, skating the pros, skating everybody.
What's it do with this seaside here? You started, yeah. Launched a new team?
No, we launched a new organization. So we're actually going to start an organization for house league, first-time hockey players too, and we're going to make it more cost-effective and more inclusive. So again, there's a lot of these organizations that are sort of popping up wanting to do it at the higher levels, but we're going back to the grassroots because I just remember when I first started house league and just the fun I had going out there, playing the game and enjoying it. So again, it gets a lot serious as you get older, but growing the game from the grassroots level, I think that's how you get lifelong hockey players, but lifelong hockey fans as well.
Stewie, you're a good man, and congrats on that. It's fantastic news. Certainly, you know, I mentioned off the top of the program the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't start with the conversation that's still a huge conversation in my world since Friday night, and that's Montreal's controversial selection of Logan Mailloux, 31st overall. You know, there's a variety of different routes we can go with this. In total, I thought it was a really, really embarrassing 15 minutes or so from the NHL, from that pick to whatever that was from Chicago at number 32. But Stewie, why don't you lead the conversation here as to, you know, your thoughts on how that went down. Of course, Saturday, the player, of course, denouncing that he wanted to be in the draft first and foremost, but ends up getting selected by Montreal. And I couldn't get over Mark Bergevin saying proudly select. And maybe it was just one of those things you say, but how did you read it?
Yeah, I'm not really one to pile on, but I'm shocked the fact that they made the pick, especially after he renounced his rights and saying, hey, do not pick me. So at least he's accepting of what he did and understands that, you know, playing in the National Hockey League is not a privilege and a right. And again, he's going to have to go and work on himself as a young gentleman, because right now in these times, not even just these times, but anyways, you have to act a certain way in society. So I'm surprised by the pick too. But, you know, right now for the media right now, again, you have a chance now to keep the Montreal Canadiens accountable. I don't want to go back to in 2 weeks from now asking them about Shea Weber and Carey Price and all these other issues. If you're really this serious about this issue, you got to stay on them, and that's how you make change. Keeping them accountable, you know, not just day one, but day 100 as well.
Yeah, just it didn't seem fair for anyone involved to make that pick. You know, the victim had basically just been looking for a sincere apology out of this, and you know, the player had asked to not be drafted. It felt like it would have been pretty reasonable to let this whole thing breathe, to give the victim the chance to get the apology that she felt she deserved, for the player to have another year of growth and reflection and to revisit things next year. You know, by picking him, it almost, you know, now the victim is back in the news. We're talking about it. He's got a, you know, he seems like the bad guy because he hasn't put in, well, he is, but he hasn't paid his dues, his penance yet. It just... bad situation all the way around. Bad pick. Not understandable from any direction. Not saying the kid doesn't deserve a second chance, but the second chance doesn't have to come 9 minutes after the infraction either.
No, like I totally agree, and that's exactly the point. You know, I've been intimating the last couple days. I would love to know the chain of events that led to that selection, because there's no doubt in my world, not just Mark Bergevin and company knew. Obviously, the higher ups probably knew, but you know, guys. If you have to put together a sort of a media release to talk about why you made a selection, you probably shouldn't make that selection, right, Stewie?
Yeah, and we saw the Arizona Coyotes renounce their pick after the pressure,
exactly.
Right? And and then we saw the interview with the head of scouting there, and he was literally at a loss for words, literally. So I'm sure this was something that they probably made a decision at the last minute, because your scouting director doesn't even know or doesn't really have an answer. Because really, usually if you're making a pick of this headline, you got to have some answers here. So the fact they didn't have answers shows that they probably didn't care in making the choice too. So I just want to go back to, hey, we want change. We demand change. You got to hold the organizations accountable. So I know it's not great to talk about, but again, we're at a time and age now where, you know, certain things aren't acceptable, but you got to hold the organizations at the highest levels accountable, or we're going to keep hearing about these stories left, right, and center.
Yeah, I concur. Like, you know, these things are obviously very, very important to talk about, but I just thought it was really, really disgusting. And it's a tough transition, but again, you know, it was a hectic 48 hours. It started about midway through Friday leading up to the draft. And then the big bombshell, and I'm not talking about the Oliver Ekman-Larsson deal. We'll get to that. But Seth Jones, guys, lands in Chicago. A massive deal. Adam Boqvist, one of the big pieces going back the other way to Columbus. First and foremost, I thought it was a job well done by Jarmo Kekalainen. But Borny, what did you think of the deal and also the 8-year extension, $9.5 million per for a guy who's just adored in the analytics community?
Well, it's funny because if you analyze this trade and that contract, it can come out sounding like I don't think Seth Jones is great, which is not the case at all. He's been a number one defenseman in the league. He's a young guy, you know, wasn't in a great situation, has a real chance to be an impactful player on a, you know, Chicago hockey team for a long time. So say that first and foremost. You know, he's been a legitimate top pair guy, and those aren't easy to come by. That said, I think Columbus won the trade. I like Boqvist. You know, getting a first round pick was unbelievable. Moving up with another first rounder, like they really put themselves in a position to capitalize on the fact that Jones wanted out. So good on Columbus there. And then the extension is just a lot of money. It's a lot of money. It is, you know, $9.5 million for a guy who, you know, hasn't necessarily proven that he can drive results in the past year or two here. So there are concerns there. But I like Jones. It's not the worst bet in the world. So I hope it works out for both sides.
Yeah, and remember Chicago, you know, beating Edmonton in the bubble now. I think this now helps stabilize it, where it sort of fast tracks this rebuild that they're having. And I'm ready to have the debate right now, too, because, again, analytics community right now, they're saying, oh, he's awful, he's brutal, he's not worth this money. I dare anybody in the analytics community to go to their GM and say, you know what, this is a bad choice. This guy's going to be brutal. And I'll laugh when you guys get laughed out of the room, too, because, again, his underlining numbers aren't great, but this guy is a horse. He's a stud. He's a thoroughbred. He's a top 10 defenseman guy, defenseman in the league. So I'll have that debate on Twitter. That is pure eye test too. He plays 25, he can play 27 minutes, he can lug the puck, good stick, good gap. Those are the things that teams are looking for, and I think he can help put a team over the top. So Chicago, I don't think they're really a contender next year, but he's going to be stabilizing that blue line for years to come, by the way, with his brother as well. Shout out Popeye Jones.
Yeah, I love that as well. That's a great correlation as well. Caleb Jones picked up in the Duncan Keith deal a couple weeks back and now reunited with his brother, and they did a whole unveiling on Saturday, which I thought was tremendous as well. But we're not trying to open up the whole debate, analytics or not. Obviously, analytics is a massive tool to where the game is today. And Stewie, I side more with you that I just look at the resume, I look at the body of work, I look at the team he's been on, I look at his size, the way he skates, the way he defends, and you know, I don't know if I can justify $9.5 million per season, but if you have to overpay to have a guy like that with you long term, who's still in the key moments of his career, sign me up. And we will see. Like, I'm really excited to see, first and foremost, Seth Jones run a power play in Chicago. I feel like that's been sort of a missing piece of the Hawks the last couple of years. It was a lot to ask of Adam Boqvist last season. Duncan Keith is not really a QB anymore at this point in time in his career. But I think the opportunity to play with Patrick Kane and Kirby Dach and DeBrincat, I think will reinvigorate a guy like Seth Jones, who the last couple of years it's been, you know, rather tumultuous. Maybe that's too strong of a word, but it's been trying in Columbus for sure, and changing of the guard there. So when I look at Seth Jones, Borny, there's just too much to pass up in my world. And if it means a contract like that, I get it. And I just I've seen too many good plays from this guy, and I've seen this guy dominate hockey games way too often.
Look, there's a lot of reasons to think it'll, you know, age reasonably well. I mean, for one, he skates like a dream. Wasn't there a game where the Columbus beat the Leafs, I think, in OT in the play-in round? I think Jones played like 52 minutes or something, like, you know, and his skating got better throughout the game. So, you know, he's also kind of a leaner guy. Like, you feel like he's going to continue to just get stronger later in his career, get more of that man strength. I know he's been around a while, but yeah, there's reason to believe that, you know, this is going to be solid for Chicago. Obviously an excellent player, and again, it takes capital to acquire and keep top end guys.
Now, one question here,
Borny, would you take him on the Leafs at that cap hit with the possibility of losing Morgan Riley?
it's just the cap situation so bad. Like, you have to do something else with that. Like, yes, I mean, would like him. And in the short term of that cap hit, absolutely. But then someone else has got to go too, because they're so jammed up against the cap. If they can play with like 14 players next year, I definitely would. But it would make the cap situation real tough.
The old Vegas, right? Obviously, the Leafs would love to have a player like that, but this is a reason why this team has been quiet the last week. The expectation's just not there to make moves. Of course, certainly they're going back with the same brain trust, and we totally get it. For those out there complaining, you know, trying to say apples to apples when it comes to Seth Jones and Cale Makar, it's not. So Makar hits the jackpot on the weekend, and I'm not talking about his brother being drafted by Colorado as well, but a six-year deal. $54 million, $9 million AAV, but keep in mind, of course, he's way younger than Seth Jones, and this just bought 1 year of UFA. Stewie, would you make that extension pretty much a blank check, I would say, for Cale Makar in Colorado?
Absolutely. He's one of those guys where he's, you know, he deserves all the money, and just the way that he can dominate games, he's going to be a contender for the Norris Trophy every single year too, because just that skating and that dynamic, and Colby Armstrong always says he's almost like he's like a forward, you know, on the back end there too. Just the way that he takes over games, and just seeing him across the line, I just have a true fascination with his game left, right, and center. So I'm guaranteeing you by, you know, five, six, and seven, and eight, you're going to be like, you know what, this guy, we got him on the cheap too, because he's worth every single penny. I would not be surprised this next deal, $17 million when the cap has gone up to 27 or whatever it may be.
It's not impossible. No, man, but like, it's not impossible to think that this Makar deal ends up looking like the Nathan MacKinnon deal, where MacKinnon's like one of the five best players in the league, and he's making $6 million, and we're going, how did that happen? Like, Makar, the best players in the league in the next year or two might be like Connor McDavid, then Cale Makar. It might be he's that good. Like, he's in that class for me. So $9 million for that, it's going to be a bargain. There's no way that this deal doesn't end up looking good. For me, my number one defenseman in the NHL.
It's sort of funny when you look at Twitter and, you know, the deal goes up there, and right away you could tell Twitter is like swirling and saying, what the hell is that? Like, you got that sense a bit with Seth Jones. Not so much for Cale Makar. We saw 6 years, $54 million, and just Twitter just moved on, and understandably so. I think you hit the nail on the head with that. The Vancouver at Arizona blockbuster. Can we call it a blockbuster? I would. Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Connor Garland go to the Vancouver Canucks and just cap dump left and right. The Coyotes just been become a cap mule this offseason. We expected it, but Louis Erickson, Jay Beagle, Antoine Roussel, the ninth overall goes there, 2022 second rounder, a seventh rounder in 2023. At this point in time, we know what Arizona at least is trying to attempt to do here in the offseason. But from the Vancouver perspective, Borny, how much risk do you think is involved in making this deal right now for Jim Benning?
There's risk. There's definite risk. You know, the just getting out from the Erickson deal, and, you know, depending on who you ask, the OEL deal could look like the Erickson deal by the time you get to 2027. Like, he's not the player he was 5 years ago. His numbers have not looked great, and he's been fairly one-dimensional. However, he's better than defensemen that have been on the Vancouver Canucks, many of them, and he's going to make them better immediately. And Connor Garland is very good. So the Vancouver Canucks are better today than they were yesterday. And so, yes, did they kick some of their problems down the road in terms of salary cap, in terms of draft picks? They definitely did. You can see why Jim Benning would do that. But the Canucks are better, and they have a lot of pieces now in a pretty soft division. Like, this, to me, puts the Canucks in a playoff spot in my mind, at least. And there's value in that. There's value in being competitive and trying to win now, so I don't hate it.
Yeah, with Jim Benning, I'm not sure if he was banned from the Roxy, but I'm sure now if he walked in there, they would be buying him a beer because what he did, and addition by subtraction now, where 2 months ago, we're like, how are they going to get out of these problems? And just the addition by subtraction and getting rid of Beagle and Louis Erickson, Antoine Russell, buying out Vertan and Sutter's off the books and adding some quality players. And I can see Ekman-Larsson, if he comes in there, he can stabilize that blue line. And, you know, just some of these players here that they got coming in, I think they just went from, you know, pretenders to contenders, I think, overnight too. And there's still some talk they might be moving out Schmidt. Holpe might be on the move as well too. So now that with that cap space now, you find a way to pay Pettersson, you find a way to get Hughes' money, and you can still have some money left over now to add to that top six and add to that bottom six as well too. So I still think Höglander needs a little bit more time. I'm not sure if he's ready for second line duties, but this what he did right now, that's cap gymnastics, Olympic style gymnastics, gold medal performance by Benning right now. Give him his flowers, because getting out of those contracts and pushing it down the road, I like it.
I like the correlation. Don't forget about Pod Colson coming into the mix next season as well for the Vancouver Canucks. And certainly there is relief for one season, and then it just doesn't look so great down the road. But I think expectations, the big word I would use in this deal. Like, you know, it's so hard to quantify at this point in time what Oliver Ekman-Larsson is. But I think I will say, similar to Seth Jones and that discussion we had with Columbus, just you would have to think he's reinvigorated. It's certainly a market he's been linked to for the last couple of years, and it sounds like he really, really wanted to be a Vancouver Canuck, so it's time to go out there and show it. And certainly there's a lot to be enthusiastic about if you're a new player coming into an organization like Vancouver, especially the names you just mentioned, Stewie. I think the lost player in this deal, sort of, is Connor Garland, isn't it, Borny?
Yeah, no, he's elite. I just want to say, to Stewie's point, I understand the idea of giving him his flowers, but he's trading away bad contracts he gave in some cases. So I'm going to take a couple of those flowers back. But yeah, the Connor Garland thing, like, there were teams around the league really vying for his services. I thought the Oilers would have been a nice fit for him, but a real contributor at a good age, and he's going to make a difference. That team has a lot of pieces, I'm telling you. So it is encouraging when you look at this roster, and as to Stewie's point about addition by subtraction, they absolutely did. Some players who were not providing value to this team, let alone on their contracts, are suddenly moved out too, which makes some more opportunity. So yeah, it's a bright offseason in the short term for the Vancouver Canucks.
Stewie, I wanted to ask you as well, since we're on the conversation of flowers, you want to come in with me on a sort of bouquet to Buffalo? And pardon the alliteration there, but I thought it was a pretty damn good weekend for Kevin Adams in terms of transactions, especially the Rasmus Ristolainen deal with Philly. Gets Robert Hägg, a first-round pick, a 2023 second-rounder. They move Sam Reinhart for Devin Levi, of course, who starred for Canada at the World Juniors, and a first-round pick, top 10 protected, of course. Jack Eichel's still a Sabre, but certainly there has been a lot of pressure, Stewie, here in this offseason for Buffalo to make some moves, and they're pretty much all in on the rebuild and the pain for Shane, right?
Yeah, and they got some decent picks and kicking the, you know, the future looks bright too. But I think right now, with this hardworking city that Buffalo is, you got to not necessarily win now, but you got to sell some hope. So I know they got some picks coming in, but he's going to be judged, and his first big move is going to be what he does with Jack Eichel. And right now it sounds like the return's not going to be that great. So yeah, give him his flowers a little bit right now, not a full bouquet, maybe a half dozen here, half baker's dozen, but right now it's going to be judged. What can he do with Eichel, and what's the expectation? Because you can't just say, yeah, you know what, next year we're going to be okay. It's going to be a very, very tough division. So you have to get some quality players. You have to have some solid goaltending, because if you don't compete, it's just going to be tough and miserable in Buffalo, and it's going to be tough to recruit and get free agents coming there. So you have to sell something, and hopefully some of that is some wins next season.
It's true. Like, no free agent is going to Buffalo. So I do appreciate what he's done this offseason. You know, the Taylor Hall situation, they had him over a barrel, like with a no trade clause or no move or whatever it was. Hall couldn't, you know, he wasn't able to get much for Hall, but great job in the Ristolainen trade. Absolutely. You know, God, you look at Morgan Riley and the Leafs, you know, maybe think about moving that deal. If Ristolainen's worth a first rounder, that has to be awfully tempting. But nice job there. And yeah, and good return on the Reinhart thing too. So could they use another elite player in the draft? It looks like they're headed in that direction. Wasn't it these two teams, Arizona and Buffalo, where they were actually, their fans were like cheering the other team scoring because they were trying to tank in the past? Yeah. So anyway, they've been down this road before. Hopefully a good player ends up with the Buffalo Sabres. As I've said on Twitter, I'm rooting for Buffalo. They deserve a winner there.
And that's what I'm marking it as, pain for Shane Stewie. Do you like that, Shane Wright?
Yeah, but again, we saw what happened with the first overall picks the last couple of years. It's tough for them to come in and make an impact right away. And to go into a losing situation, I think that's going to be too much pressure on Shane Wright to come in. You know, maybe he's going to say, I'm renouncing and I'm staying in the OHL for the next couple of years too until they figure it out. So I would say you got to sell some wins. You got to find a way to be competitive. So they got to make a couple more moves. But I think right now, Jack Eichel trade has a very good way to speed up the process for sure.
Yeah, so much happened this past week, and you sort of forget that Owen Power went first overall to the Buffalo Sabres. At least I forget. The Columbus Blue Jackets, I thought, had a pretty decent weekend as well. We talked about the return. I thought they did pretty nicely with Seth Jones, considering it only sounded like there's a couple teams he'd go to and subsequently sign an extension. They trade Cam Atkinson for Jake Voracek, a deal, Borny, that sort of came out of left field, but I think you get the perspective from both sides here.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I can see a Columbus team that doesn't see the next season or two as their Stanley Cup window, and Voracek's deal ends the season before Atkinson, so if they're both declining assets, one of the contracts ends sooner. So that's appealing. I think your chance to capitalize on Patrick Laine, if you're Columbus, is better with a passer like Voracek who can set him up and play with him, talented mm-hmm. guy. And for Philly, you save on cap space and still have a player who can provide offense. Scored 15 times last year, Atkinson did. So still, you know, that's in 50 games or whatever. So still a valuable player on the offensive side. One of those deals that just makes sense. Makes sense from both sides. I see what both teams are trying to do.
Yeah, I think it's both like an apples and oranges trade where both players just need a change of scenery, and both are high quality players. I know Voracek has the high cap hit, but you know, and you know, you lengthen out his season the last couple of seasons. It's 50-60 pace. So I know the media has been all over him. He's been sort of yipping back and forth with the media. Change of scenery. I could still see him going in, putting up 20 and 30, 50 points next year. Cam Atkinson was still a great player as well too. It just didn't really work for him, and I'm not sure. I didn't really read his quotes today that he had on Columbus. I'm sure they weren't too positive. So I could see both players being, you know, really good acquisitions and still showing that they have something left in the National Hockey League.
The thing I like about Columbus, they're extremely decisive in their decisions. A couple years back, they pretty much went all in, and we expected and forecasted something like this. And they're trying to change that locker room up a bit, of course. Brad Larson, now the head coach, John Tortorella, that era has come to a conclusion. The Philadelphia Flyers, it was a disappointing season. Many had projected that team to do something substantial, not only make the playoffs, but go far in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And, Stewie, it's quite clear that they're trying to mix things up in that dressing room. Certainly the changes they made in the back end, Ristolainen, Ryan Ellis comes into the mix as well. Cam Atkinson, who's known as sort of a more of a leader, a guy who really, really loved being a Columbus Blue Jacket, heart and soul type guy. Because you look at Voracek as well, it sounded like he was disgruntled. It sounded like he wanted to change the scenery. He's familiar with Columbus, so that deal made a lot of sense from that perspective as well. But Stewie, how much better, in your opinion, is Philadelphia now than they were, say, a week ago?
I think they're much better. And wink, wink, cough, yep. cough. They realized, hey, you know what? We had high expectations and we didn't make it. We have to make a change. So I think there's some mm-hmm. other teams throughout the league, I'm not going to say two, can recognize that. And not saying heads are rolling, but you have to make big, big changes to expect different results. So for me, with the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, Carter Hart doesn't go from a top-end goalie to a bum overnight. That's nothing to do with his game too. I think they needed to stabilize that defense and bring in Ristolainen and bring in Ellis. I think it's going to help stabilize and make him get back to, you know, his regular form, because they do say the crease has been cursed since Hextall, so I'll just chalk it up to that. But I can see him having a bounce back here, and with these addition on defense and adding Atkinson, I could see them going back to contenders overnight as well.
Borny, final word to you.
Yeah, I'll just co-sign with Stewie there. I like what they're doing. I like the changes. I think Ellis is a nice player. He just they need to be different than they've been, and they're getting name players, right? They're getting guys who slot in and can handle themselves, establish NHL guys. There's not as many question marks or doubt about what they are. They're trying to win this upcoming season. Hey, as I mentioned with Vancouver, I'm always in favor of that.
And I like they backed Carter Hart a bit too, considering and saying, hey, we were terrible defensively. I know Hart didn't have a great season, but I like them backing their young netminder in that. With that, we'll hit the break. Other side, a man who needs a minimal introduction. It's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, John Cooper, up here on Hockey Central. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart. This is the Monday edition of Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty, spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup.
All right, the Monday edition of Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590. The Fan rolls on. Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart with you at the Golden Muzzy, at JT Bourne, at Stu Monroe, where you can follow along on Twitter. Momentarily, we'll link up here with John Cooper, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, but certainly a team that could make a substantial change here in the offseason. And back on July 7th, the Lightning blanked the Canadiens 1-0 in Game 5 to capture its second straight Stanley Cup. And third in franchise history. It's time to bring in the longest currently tenured head coach in the NHL. He loves cigars, chewing excessive amounts of gum, and of course, winning hockey games. It's Lightning head coach John Cooper. Coop, what's going on?
How's it going, guys? How's the summer going?
Fantastic. Yours is probably much better. Like, what have you been up to, and who's the coolest person has congratulated you via text?
I don't know. Everybody's cool that sends me a text. But it's been a different summer. There's like, it's weird because at this point you're thinking maybe it's end of June and, you know, you're looking forward to your summer and stuff like that. And basically I'm getting the, hey, school's starting for your kids here in a couple weeks and you got to prepare for this. I'm like, what? Cause it's, I just can't believe it's August 1st is coming up and Tampa, like, it's not like the old days where school used to start when I was growing up, like after Labor Day. Everything starts, I think our school starts August 18th. So it's just different that everything is, it feels like next year is already upon us.
Yeah, it's wild. I guess good problems to have. Thanks for joining us, yeah. John. I wanted to ask you a question going back into your past as a coach, because there are certain techniques that work at motivating players at different levels, and you've had success at all of them. And I imagine finding out what those things are at each level is a challenge. Is there been anything universal in terms of motivating players and coaching that has worked at every level, on the way up and on the way to winning Stanley Cups?
I don't know. I think in the end, you're still dealing with people, regardless if they can't skate backwards or they're the best players in the world. It is right. Still human beings. You have everybody still wants to win. Everybody still wants to be the best. Everybody still wants to be pushed, and they still want to get better. They still want to know that somebody cares about them. They want to know that somebody cares about their family, and you kind of. Those are just things that are a basis. And then you always look for events or something that is challenging you or challenging the player or challenging the team. And, you know, I've tried to kind of use that as a motivating factor to get players going or to get a team going. And I never try and look at it as an individual. I always try and make it a team environment. But in the end, you're still dealing with people. We all have the same emotions, whether they're high or low. And, you know, trying to corral everybody from 23 individuals and making them one, that's the big challenge. But when you're battling every single day, there's always little things you can pick to motivate people. And it's basically what I try and do.
I wanted to ask about the post-cup festivities there. How great was it to celebrate with the fans to get a sense of normalcy, you know, during a pandemic here? And did you have to pull anyone aside or have any team rules saying, hey, guys, take it easy here, or you just let them run wild?
Well, I think it was the second we won, I think you saw a little bit of the running wild. So it's been a lot of fun to be with the guys. But to be honest, you know, and I think you've probably heard me say this 1,000 times, but last year was such a unique experience. And I wouldn't trade it for anything, to be honest. The memories in the bubble, I will always cherish some of the experiences we had. But in the end, we play a sport where yes, we're in the competition business, but we're also in the entertainment business. And arenas are meant to have fans in them. The Stanley Cup is meant to be shared with people. And I think last year when we won, you know, you're winning your first championship. It doesn't matter. And I always cherish it's weird. The moment, because now I've been able to do it twice, when there was no family and no friends and no anybody around, the celebration in the locker room was amazing, because the only people we had to celebrate with was ourselves. So I really did love that part of it. But in the end, the best part was being in the fan with the fans. I think it was all, in a weird way, maybe it was meant to be this way. So the guys got to, you know, we lose that game in overtime in game four, and you're just like, oh, we were so close to doing this, but you couldn't have written the script any better for us to come home and be able to do it in front of the fans. And it was such an awesome experience just to like be on the ice and look how happy everybody was. And you kind of spot out your family up there. And it was just like, oh my God, so this is what it was meant. This is what it really, really feels like. So very, very fortunate that we were able to do it twice. And like I said, it was almost fitting that the guys got to be at home with their families.
Chatting with Lightning head coach John Cooper here on Hockey Central. Did Bud Light sign you too?
No, because I always had it behind the name tag. Some of the guys, they didn't care having it. If you notice that little, like the little name tag in front is, you know, it's a good, you know, 8 inches tall, so it covers the Gatorade cup.
The gum, like I wanted to ask you about the gum because every time I watch you on TV, you're just chewing like an animal. Do you have a preference in gum, John?
So yes, it had started many years ago in junior. Gosh, it's probably been going now like 15 years. But it was had a piece of double bubble. You know, like the kind of rectangle, and there's like a joke inside.
Yeah.
So. It was
it's awful gum.
So I threw it in, and then I read the we were going through whatever bad streak or something like that, and then I threw it in, and so then I read the joke. I read the joke after the anthem, and then I throw the wrapper at the backup goalie, so he's always ready for it, like if he can catch it or not. And honestly, it's gone on for 15 years. We ended up winning, and then we won again, and we won again, and I'm like, oh God! And now, like, it's the same piece too, so. Just imagine that puppy in the 5 overtimer against Columbus.
Oh,
so it's just
oh my
like,
God.
Oh.
You're chewing the same piece of double bubble? That gum lasts for 2 minutes. That's insanity to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, flavor's gone. Oh, yeah. That's why it's just...
What is wrong with you?
That's why everybody's like, hey, Coop, why are you so calm on the bench? I'm like, because I'm worn out. Like you're chewing the gum the whole time. I can't do anything.
That's valid.
But, no. In all seriousness, it's become, you know, it's. I feel bad because it's become a little bit of a calling card. Because when I've seen myself too, I'm like, oh my God, that's disgusting. Like what I'm doing. Like I'm grinding. But now you know why. Because that piece is really.
Can work
grinding.
Out the frustration there somewhere. It makes some sense to me.
Yeah. But I'll tell you though, it's funny with wearing the mask though. You couldn't. There was no way. It was really hard to chew
with
the mask because it was all over your face. So it saved me a bit.
That's great. Looking at these playoff series and, you know, winning 8 playoff series in a row there to win 2 Stanley Cups, how much of those series is about actual, like, systems adjustments and changing the way your team plays versus just getting your guys motivated and getting them on the ice at the right time and kind of playing the same way you've always played?
Yeah. Well, just think, we're only 11 behind the Islanders. We're right there.
Almost there, yeah.
Almost there. That's unbelievable, that streak. But to be honest, this year was different. I'd say this year was more adjustments than last year. Last year we played like basically the 4 best defensive teams in the league. You know, with Dallas, Columbus, Islanders, and Boston. And they all played, it was kind of similar systems in what they did. So we honestly didn't have to change as much as we would. And in the end, like, I'm a huge believer. You know, I learned this from Bobby Knight many years ago, and I was fortunate to meet him. You know, he's like, just worry about your team. Other teams will have to adapt to you. Like, and I always stuck in my head, like, just make sure your game's going on. But this year was different because Florida plays a really exciting brand, and they play a completely different system than Carolina does. Like, complete different. And so then we play Carolina, and now we're going to the Islanders, which was completely different than Carolina and Florida. So we were like, wow, we have to make adjustments here just in the sense of we're played, you know, completely contrasting styles, which, you know, happens in the NHL, but there's more like little tweaks here and there. So this year, and it got to Montreal, and it was, you know, probably a little hybrid blend of some of the teams we played. So I would say this year there was definitely a little bit more adjustments and things we had to do to put ourselves in a position to win than last year.
Just important as it is to sell wins, it's selling hope in the future. Is there any young guys that you're really excited for and the fans can get excited for the next year or two?
Yeah, I think so. And I think because of what's happened the past 2 years, there's been some roadblocks. And so some players have had to stay in the American League. Hard for me to single out, a bunch of guys, because all of a sudden now you're sitting here saying, oh, this guy's going to make it. But we've got a good group of guys down there. We had some guys called up, like Barb Roulet came up and played some meaningful games for us. And we had Radish up for, but we couldn't really get him in a game. And, Boris Kachuk's down there. And I think these guys would have been probably in the NHL earlier had, we not had the team we've had. And plus, we didn't really get in major injury trouble. So there just weren't spots really open. And then everybody's well aware of our salary cap situation. So we couldn't, it's not like we could, at times we had to play short, like a number of teams did during the year. So I think, it's going to be a tough summer. It already is, in the sense that we knew as a group that this probably was the last time the actual full group would be together. But we still have an outstanding core coming back, and there's just going to have to be some pieces that are going to be filled in around. And, Benny Gruen and his staff in the American League have done like an awesome job in making sure guys are ready when they come up. And so I think there's going to be really, really good competition for some spots that will be open. And so I these are players that have had success in the American League. And myself, when I was down there for 3 years, it was the greatest development coaching for me to get myself ready for the NHL. I think it's no different than for players as well. And I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, oh my God, he was in the American League too long. It's a great development league. And so pretty excited that some of these players will be ready to go next year when we start.
Yeah, I think you guys are going to be okay. With John Cooper, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, the buzz term around here lately has been killer instinct. It's tough to quantify what that actually means or is. It took your team a while to finally break through. What does killer instinct mean to you?
Well, are you saying in the terms that our team finally got killer instinct, that's why we won?
Well, just the ability to break through, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's killer instinct. I think when you reach this level, all the players want to win. They're all really good. The reason they're in the NHL is because they've been the best wherever they've gone and growing up, and they've probably won where they've been that's got them to this point. So, there's certain players that have it. I think if you were to break down every single team in the league, you'd sit here and say, oh, my God, that guy's gamer. That guy's got it. That guy's got the it factor. And some guys you would describe differently. I think collectively as a group, you got to have a culture. You have to have an identity. You have to have something you believe in. And I don't think, I can't sit here and say the Montreal Canadiens did not have that. I think they did have killer instinct. They had what it took to win a cup. We just, for a 7-game series in July, we were the better team. But there's a reason they got there. There's a reason the Islanders took us to game 7, because it's the teams are so close, and they have, they had in that spring an it factor. And so, we were the fortunate team to win, but I can't sit there and quantify, just because we won, we're the only team that had that. All these teams, they show a resiliency, and in the end, you need a little bit of luck. You need things to go your way. And I know in years we've lost, I've looked back and said, oh my God, I can't believe that guy got hurt, or the puck bounced this way. And, the 2 years we've won, you look at it the other way and say, wow, did we ever get a break there? And so it's so close. Like I said, all the teams have these things. We were just fortunate enough in the last 2 years to push it across the finish line.
I think Nick's question is kind of related to mine, in that everything in Toronto is viewed through the lens of, what does this mean for Toronto? That is how everything operates up here, right or wrong. And the narrative with your team that is written up here is that, oh, you were a super talented team, and then you finally got the toughness. You got tough enough with Goodrow and Coleman and those guys to push you over the top. Where do you stand on that toughness being the missing element for this Tampa Bay Lightning team that finally got it done?
Yeah, well, everybody, you need the blend, right? I think I truly believe this. There are teams that don't make the playoffs, like just miss out, that I really think maybe could have made a run in the playoffs. And there's two different styles. Like you have to get into the playoffs. And you need skilled players. You need guys that can put the puck in the net. You need that to get in. And we always went, you know, I look back at the career that I've been with Tampa. We were kind of like, when we all came up, the young guys, we were like the new kids in the block. We made it to the Stanley Cup final in my second year. And, you know, we ended up losing to Chicago. And then we knocked on the door. Like, we were game seven in 2016, game seven of the conference finals in 2018. And we lost both those. And it was just a matter of, like, we had a core group that could do it. We just needed the depth. And so whether you want to call that toughness or grit or whatever, you need depth players. I don't know teams that win that don't have it. And you have to stay injury-free. And we ended up – the other thing is, too, we've kind of slotted guys in their right spots. You know, guys like Yanni Gord playing the wing, we pushed them in the center. We had – you know, when you get these guys at the trade deadline, you don't – all of a sudden you're trying them on different lines because there's no practice time. So you're just throwing guys in to see where they fit. I think the pandemic – you know, there was that little break probably helped us a little bit because guys got to know each other a little more. And we just, you know, guys slotted in their spots. And then in the end, you know, they buy into their roles. And that's a key part to the whole, you know, was for us anyway. But you need depth. And a lot of times that depth ends up being, you know, not the guys that are playing on the power play. And so in the end, you get credit for a lot of that. But, you know, I can sit there and say, well, yes, our depth was a big reason we won some rounds, but I also can sit here and say, hey, if our power play isn't humming, we're not even out of the first round. You know, they kind of carried us. So you need all your guys like pushing in the right direction. And like I said, when it's all going right, you end up going far as we did.
Number one BS, John. Thanks so much for this. Really appreciate it. Congratulations, man. We can talk for days and really appreciate your time today.
All right, my pleasure, guys. Have a great rest of the summer.
Thanks,
you,
John.
As well. That is John Cooper, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Take one look at his resume on Wikipedia. This dude literally has won everywhere he has coached. It's simply insane. And with that, we'll hit the break and we'll wrap after this. It's Nick Alberga, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, back here to wrap on this Monday edition of Hockey Central. Don't forget, coming up on Wednesday, we'll have a special signing season edition of Hockey Central. 2 hours, noon Eastern time to 2 p.m. Eastern time. Yours truly and Justin Bourne will break everything that happens and transpires here in free agency. And certainly a big topic of conversation will be some of the bigger names, and we'll see over the next couple of days. But I wanted to wrap with the conversation, guys, on Ryan Getzlaf, Borny. It sounds like Getzlaf could go to the open market. He's already been linked to Edmonton. Do you think that's a good fit?
I mean, it depends on the price, but yeah, if he's you know, very cheap, then yes, absolutely. Edmonton is dying for support players around, obviously, the big names that are there. A lot of money going to Zach Hyman coming up. So, yeah, he would absolutely be a big fit, big-bodied guy who can make the little plays. Not that he's Corey Perry in style, but the same way that you don't have to count on him as your number one. But I bet if you get in playoffs, he scores you a couple of big goals.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to go all Stewie Scoops here, but I heard like from a reliable source last year that he's going to be on the move, and it's going to be somewhere in the Southern Central Division. So make with that what you will. That's what I heard. I'll look into it. Maybe I'll get back to you on it tomorrow. But I'm hearing he's going somewhere to the Central.
Is that an insider with six R's or seven R's?
Four R's. And a question mark on my face, yep.
How about Vegas? Does that fit?
No. They need a second top six winger. Center, sorry.
So at this point, we think Getzlaf's a 3C, right?
I mean, that's, yeah. He's getting to the Joe Thornton part of his career here, where it's like if he wants to play 13 minutes at center for you, you feel pretty darn good about it. Anything more than that, and your team's probably in some trouble.
Final wrap here, guys. Stewie, what'd you take away from John Cooper? What he had to say?
I just love the fact that he sounds like a coach that you'd want to play for. And some coaches at the higher levels, they sort of get a little bit moody, but he's just a fun guy. He loves his job. He's, you know, constantly striving to get better. And I'm not surprised why they're having success. It starts with him. He's a great guy to be around. And Tampa Bay, I think, are going to be contenders for years to come under his helm.
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned that at the core of coaching is that you're dealing with people, and those people need to feel heard and seen and recognized and important and valued and all those things. At the same time, sometimes they have to hear harsh truths, and I think he's got a nice temperament and demeanor and a nice way of delivering those realities to people. Obviously, he has found his stride, one of the best coaches in the world, given his track record.
Yeah, and like honestly, I think there's a lot of correlations to draw between Tampa and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the fact that it took them so long to finally get there, disappointment after disappointment, and then finally got over it, and now it just seems like every series win, every playoff win comes of relative ease to that organization. So certainly a method to the madness of the question about killer instinct, and we'll see what the offseason has in store here for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But plenty of thanks to everybody involved in today's show. Again, it's going to be a busy week in the NHL, no doubt about that, coming up Wednesday, signing season at noon Eastern time here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But many thanks to John Cooper, J.R. Manitad, Dylan Brown, and Lance Kennedy. For Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart, I'm Nick Alberga. Thanks so much for listening. Talk on Wednesday.